his arm, and he gave a groan and took a step back, raising his hand protectively. "Yes, I'll do it, yes!" "See you do," said Vimes, taken aback. Then he too looked down at the inside of his wrist. "What the hell is this?" he said, turning to Bashfulson. "Ah, it left its mark on you, Commander," said the Grag cheerfully. "An exit wound, perhaps?" On the soft underskin of Vimes's wrist, the sign of the summoning dark blazed as a livid scar. Vimes turned his arm this way and that. "It was real," he said. "Yes, but it is gone, I'm sure. There is a difference in you." Vimes rubbed the symbol. It didn't hurt. It was just raised, reddened skin. "It's not going to come back, is it?" he said. "I doubt it'll risk it, sir," said Angua. Vimes opened his mouth to ask her what she meant by that piece of sarcasm, when yet more dwarfs trotted into the cavern. These were the tallest and broadest dwarfs he'd ever seen. Unlike most dwarfs, they wore simple mail shirts and carried one axe, one good, large, beautifully balanced axe. Other dwarfs bristled with up to a dozen weapons. These dwarfs bristled with one each. And they separated and spread out into the cavern with a purpose, covering lines of sight, guarding shadows, and, in the case of four of them, taking up station behind detritus and brick. When they finally clattered to a halt, another group stepped out of the tunnel. Vimes recognized Rhys, low king of the dwarfs. He stopped, looked around, glanced briefly at Vimes, and summoned the captain to him. "We have everything."
"Sire," said Good nervously.
"You know what I mean, Captain."
"Yes, but we found nothing on any of them, sire. We searched them, and we've gone over the floor three times."
"Excuse me," said Vimes.
"Commander Vimes," said the king, turning and greeting Vimes like a long-lost son. "'Tis good to see you."
"You've lost the bloody cube," said Vimes, "after all this."
"What cube would this be, Commander?" said the king.
Vimes had to admire his acting ability, at least.
"The one you're looking for," he said. "The one dug up in my city, the one all this fuss is about. They wouldn't throw it away because they're grags, right? You can't destroy words. It's the worst crime there is. They can't destroy it, and they don't dare hide it. So they'd keep it with them."
The low king looked at Captain Good, who swallowed.
"It's not in this cave," he muttered.
"They wouldn't leave it anywhere else," said Vimes. "Not now. Someone might find it." The luckless captain turned to his king, seeking help there.
"There was panic everywhere when we arrived, sire," he protested. "People running and screaming, fires everywhere. Complete chaos, sire. All we can be sure of is that no one got out. And we searched them all, sire. We searched them all."
Vimes shut his eyes. Memories were fading fast as common sense walled up all those things that could not have happened, but he recalled the panicking Grags, hunched over something. Had there been just a twinkle of blue and green specks? Time for a long shot.
"Corporal Nobbs, come here," he said. "Let him through, Captain, I insist."
Good didn't protest. His spirit was broken. A reluctant Nobby was produced.
"Yes, Mr. Vimes," he said.
"Corporal Nobbs, did you obtain that precious thing I asked you to acquire?" said Vimes.
What would that be, sir?" said Nobby.
Vimes's heart leapt. Nobby's face was an open book, albeit the kind that got banned in some countries.
"Nobby, there are times when I'll put up with you mucking about. This isn't one of those," he said. "Did you find the thing I asked you to look for?"
Nobby looked into his eyes.
Yes, sir," he said. Yes, we rushed in, you see, and people were running everywhere, and there was, like, smoke."
Nobby's face glazed, and his lips moved soundlessly in an agony of creation.
And I was bravely fighting when what did I see but a sparkly thing rolling and being kicked about, and I thought, I just bet that's the very same sparkly thing Mr. Vimes very specifically told me to be looking out for. And here it is, all safe."
He pulled a small, glittering cube out of his pocket and held it out. Vimes was faster than the king. His hand shot forward, closed over the cube, and was locked in a fist in the skin of a second.
"Well done, Corporal Nobbs, for obeying my orders so concisely," he said, and stifled a grin at Nobby's impeccably dreadful salute. "I believe that is dwarf property, Commander Vimes," said the king calmly.
Vimes opened his hand, palm up. The cube, only a couple of inches across, gave off little blue and green glints. The metal looked like bronze that had been corroded by time into a beautiful pattern of greens, blues, and browns. It was a jewel. "He's a king," thought Vimes. "A king on a throne as wobbly as a rocking horse." and he's not nice. It's not a job where the nice last long. He even got a spy into my watch. I will not put my faith in kings. Right now, who do I trust? Me. One thing I do know is that no damn demon got inside my head, no matter what they say. I wouldn't buy that, even if they threw in a lifetime supply of cabbage. No one gets into my head but me. This damn burn is just a coincidence. It doesn't mean anything. But you play the hand you're dealt. Take it, he said, opening his hand. On his wrist, the summoning dark glowed. I ask you to give it to me, Commander, said Rhys. Take it, Vimes repeated, and he thought, let's see what you believe, shall we? The king reached out, hesitated, and then slowly withdrew his hand. Or perhaps, he said, as if the thought had just occurred to him, it might be best to leave it in your celebrated custody, Commander Vimes. Yes, I want to hear what it has to say, said Vimes, closing his fist again. I want to know what was too dangerous to know. Indeed, so do I, said the King of the Dwarfs. We will take it to a place that can... Look around you, sire, snapped Vimes. Dwarfs and trolls died here. They weren't fighting, they were standing together. Look around you, the place looks like a god's damn game board. Was this their testament? Then we listen to it here, in this place, at this time. And supposing what it has to say is dreadful, said the king, then we listen. I am the king, Vimes, you have no authority here, this is not your city. You stand here defying me with a handful of men and your wife and child not 10 miles away. Rhys stopped, and the echoes bounced back from distant caves, tumbling over themselves and dying into a silence that rang like iron. Out of the corner of his ear, Vimes heard Sally say, Whoops! Bashfulson hurried forward and whispered something in the king's ear. The king's expression changed, as only a politician's face can, into careful amity. I'm not going to do a thing, Vimes told himself. I'm just going to stand here. I do look forward to seeing Lady Sybil again, said Rhys. And your son, of course. Good. They're staying in a house not 10 miles away, said Vimes. Sergeant Littlebottom.
Sir, said Cheery.
Please take Lance Constable von Humperdinck with you and go down to the town, will you? Tell Lady Sybil I'm fine, Vimes added, not taking his eyes off the king. Off you go, right now. As they hurried away, the king smiled and looked around the cavern. Then he sighed. Well, I cannot afford a row with Ankh-Morpork, not at the moment. Very well, Commander. Do you know how to make it speak? No, don't you? This is a game, right? Vimes thought. A king wouldn't take this kind of gobbiness from anyone, especially when you outnumber them 10 to 1. A row? You'd just have to say that we got caught in a storm in Coombe Valley, which is such a treacherous place, as everyone agrees. He will be greatly missed, and we will certainly hand over his body if ever it turns up. But you're not going to try that, are you, because you need me? You know something about this cavern, yes? And whatever's going to happen, you want good old not-sharp by God's East Straight Sam Vimes to tell the world. No two cubes are alike, said Rhys. It is usually a word, but sometimes a breath, a sound, a temperature, a point in the world, the smell of rain, anything. I understand that there are many cubes that have never spoken. Really, said Vimes. But this thing damn well gabbled, and whoever sent it out of the valley wanted it to be heard, so I doubt it only starts talking when the Virgin's tear falls on it on a warm Tuesday in February. And this one started chatting very smartly to a man who didn't know a word of dwarfish, too. But the speaker would want dwarfs to hear it, surely, the king protested. It's a 2,000-year-old legend. Who knows who wanted what, said Vimes. What do you want? This was to Nobby, who had appeared beside him, looking with interest at the cube. How did that he get past my guards? Said the king. The Nobs Sidle, said Vimes. And as a couple of embarrassed guards dropped heavy hands on Nobby's frail shoulders, he added, No, leave him. Come on, Nobby. You say something to make this thing start speaking.
Say something or it'll be the worse for you, Nobby suggested.
Not a bad try, Vimes conceded. 100 years ago, sire, I doubt if anyone in Ankh-Morpork knew many words of dwarf or troll. Perhaps the message was intended for humans. There must have been a settlement down on the plain with all those birds and fish to eat. Perhaps some more human words then, Nobby,
said the King.
"Okay. Open. Speak. Say something. Talk. Spill the beans. Play."
"No, no, Mr. Vames, he's doing it all wrong," Fred Colon shouted. "It was in the olden days, right? So it'd be old words like, openeth."
Vimes laughed as a thought struck. "I wonder," he thought, "it could be, stood under the open sky."
"This is just the story of the things Tack wrote,"
Cheery whispered to Vimes. Vimes shrugged and watched as some of the bodyguards hustled the old grags in the circle, Ardent among them.
"It's not new or anything," Vimes said, disappointed.
"Every dwarf knows it, sir."
"He was the first dwarf," Bashfulson translated. "He found the laws Tack had written, and he was endarkened."
The crackling voice went on, and then Bashfulson, who had his eyes closed in concentration, opened them in shock. This time he didn't bother with the oldie world language.
"Then Tack looked upon the stone, and it was trying to come alive, and Tack smiled and wroten,
'All things strive,'" said the dwarf, raising his voice above the growing commotion around him.
"And for the service the stone had given, he fashioned it into the first thrall, and delighted in the life that came unbidden. These are the things that Tack wroten."
He was shouting now because of the noise level. Vimes felt like an outsider. It seemed that everyone except him was arguing. Axes were being flourished.
"I who speak to you now am Baryon Bloodaxe, by right of the scone, the true king of the dwarfs!" Bashfulson screamed.
The cave went silent, except for the echoing scream returning from distant darkness.
"We were washed into the caves by the flood. We sought one another, voices in the dark. We are dying. Our bodies are broken by the terrible water with teeth of stone. We are too weak to climb. Water surrounds all. This testament we will entrust to young Strong in the Arm, who is still nimble, in the hope that it will reach the daylight. For the story of this day must not be forgotten. This outcome was not meant. We came to sign a treaty. It was the secret, careful work of many years."
The box stopped speaking, but there were faint groans and the rush of water somewhere.
"Sire, I demand that this should come," was shouts and screams and the clash of steel.
Vimes was watching the King's face. Some of this you knew, right? Not all of it, but you didn't look surprised that it was Bloodaxe speaking. Rumours? Old stories? Something in the records? You'll never tell me.
"Hadra," said Bashfulson, and the cube fell silent.
"That means stop, Mr. Vimes," the Grag added.
"And so we are under Coombe Valley," sneered Ardent. "And what do we find?"
"We find you," said Bashfulson. "We always find you."
"Dead trolls, dead dwarfs, and nothing more than a voice," said Ardent. "Ankh Morpork is here. They are devious. These words could have been spoken yesterday."
The King was watching Ardent and Bashfulson. So was every other dwarf. "You don't have to stand and argue," Vimes wanted to shout. "Just chain the bastards up and we can sort it out later." But being a dwarf was all about words and laws.
"These are venerable grags," said Ardent, indicating the robed figures behind him. "They have studied the histories. They have studied the devices. Thousands of years of knowledge stand before you. And you, what do you know?"
"That you came to destroy the truth," said Bashfulson.
"You dared not trust it. A voice is just a voice, but these bodies are proof."
Ardent snatched the axe from a miner and was flourishing it before any of the bodyguards could react. When realization caught up with them, there was a massed move forward.
"No," said Bashfulson, holding up his hands. "Sire, please, this is an argument between grags."
"Why do you carry no axe?" Ardent snarled.
"I need no axe to be a dwarf," said Bashfulson. "Nor do I need to hate trolls. What kind of creature defines itself by hatred?"
"You strike at the very root of us," said Ardent. "At the root."
"Then strike back," said Bashfulson, holding out his empty hands. "And put your sword away, Commander Vimes," he added without turning his head. "This is dwarf business. Ardent, I'm still standing. What do you believe in? Ha, ak, gastrak, jad!"
Ardent jerked forward, axe raised. Bashfulson moved quickly,
There was the thud of something hitting flesh, and then a tableau as motionless as the brooding figures around the cavern. There was Ardent, axe raised overhead. There was Bashfulson, down on one knee, with his head resting almost companionably against the dwarf's chest, and the edge of one hand pressed hard against Ardent's throat. Ardent's mouth opened, but all that came out was a croak and a trickle of blood. He took a few steps back and fell over backwards. The axe struck the white, wet, stony waterfall and smashed through the drip of millennia. Time fell in shards around. Bashfulson rose, looking shocked and massaging his hand.
"It is like using an axe," he said to no one in particular, "but without the axe."
The uproar began again, but a dwarf, dripping with water, pushed through the mob.
"Sire, there's a band of trolls coming up the valley. They asked for you. They said they want to parley."
Rhys stepped over the gurgling body of Ardent, looking intently at the hole in the waterfall of stone. Another piece fell down as he touched it. "Is there something unusual about their leader?" he said, still staring into the new darkness.
"Yes, sire, he's all sparkly."
"Ah, good," said the king.
"He has his parley. Bring him down here."
"Could that be a troll who knows some very powerful dwarfs?" said Vimes. The low king met his eyes for a moment.
"Yes, I imagine it is," he said. Then he raised his voice. "Someone fetch me a torch. Commander Vimes, could you just look at this, please?"
In the depths of the revealed cave, something shone. On this day in 1802, the painter Methodia Rascal dropped the glittering thing in the deepest well he knew. No one would ever hear it down there. The chicken chased him home. It would be a lot simpler, Vimes thought, if this was a story. A sword is pulled out of a stone, or a magic ring is flung into the depths of the sea, and with general rejoicing the world turns. But this was real life. The world didn't turn, it just went into a spin. It was Coombe Valley Day, and there wasn't a battle going on in Coombe Valley. But what was going on here wasn't peace either. What was going on? Well, what was going on was committees. It was negotiation. Actually, as far as he could tell, it hadn't even got as far as negotiation yet. It hadn't got past talks about meetings about delegations. On the other hand, no one had died, except maybe of boredom. There was a lot of history to be unpicked, and for those who weren't actually engaged in that delicate activity, there was Coombe Valley to tame. Two cultural heroes were down there in the cavern, and all it needed was one good storm and a few misplaced blockages for a white flood laden with grinding boulders to wipe the whole place away. It hadn't happened yet, but sooner or later the dynamic geography would get around to it. Coombe Valley couldn't be left to its own devices. Not any more. Everywhere you looked, there were teams of trolls and dwarfs, surveying, diverting, damming and drilling. They'd been engaged in this for 2 days. It would take them forever, because every winter changed the game. Coombe Valley was forcing cooperation on them. Damn Coombe Valley. Vimes thought that that was a bit too pat, but nature can be like that. Sometimes you got sunsets so pink that they had no style at all. One thing that had happened fast was the tunnel. Dwarfs had cut down quickly through the soft limestone. You could stroll down into the cavern now, although, in fact, you'd have to queue because of the long line of trolls and dwarfs. Those in the line going down eyed one another with uncertainty at best. Those in the line coming up sometimes looked angry or were close to tears, or just walked along looking at the ground. Once they got past the exit, they tended to form into quiet groups. Sam, with young Sam in his arms, didn't have to queue. News had got around. He went straight in, past the trolls and dwarfs, who were painstakingly reassembling the broken stalagmites. It was news to Vimes that you could do that, but apparently if you came back in 500 years, they'd be as good as new. And into what had come to be called the King's Cave. And there they were. You couldn't argue with it. There was the dwarf king, slumped forward across the board, glazed by the eternal drip, his beard now rock and at one with a stone. But the diamond troll king had remained upright in death, his skin gone cloudy, and you could still see the game in front of him. It was his move. A healthy little stalagmite hung from his outstretched hand. They'd broken off small stalagmites to make the pieces, which time had now glued into immobility. The scratched lines on the stone were more or less invisible, but thud players from both races had already pored over it, and a sketch of the dead king's game had already appeared in the Times. The troll king was playing the dwarf side. Apparently it could go either way. People were saying that when this was all over, they'd seal the cave. Too many people in a living cave killed it in some way, the dwarf said. And then the kings would be left in the dark to finish their game, in, with luck, peace. Water dripping on a stone, changing the shape of the world one drop at a time, washing away a valley. Yes, well, Vimes had added to himself, but it had never been that simple. And for every new generation you'd have to open it again, so that people could see that it was true. Today, though, it was open for Sam and young Sam, who was wearing a fetching woolly hat with a bobble on it. Brick and Sally were on duty, along with a couple of dwarfs and two more trolls, all watching the stream of visitors and one another. Worms covered the ceiling. The game gleamed. What would young Sam remember? Probably just the glitter, but it had to be done. The players were genuine. On that, at least, both sides agreed. The carvings on diamond were accurate, the armour and jewellery on blood axe were just as history recorded. Even the long loaf of dwarf bread that he carried into battle, and which could shatter a troll skull, was by his side. Dwarf scholars had, with delicacy and care and the blunting of 15 saw blades, removed a tiny slice of it. Miraculously, it had turned out still to be as edible now as the day it was baked, which tells you everything you need to know about dwarf bread. A minute was about enough for this historic moment, Vimes decided. Young Sam was at the grabbing age, and he'd never hear the end of it if his son ate a historic monument. "Can I have a word, Lance Constable?" he said to Sally as he turned to go. "The guard changes in a minute."
"Certainly, sir," said Sally.
Vimes strolled off to a corner of the cavern and waited until Nobby and Fred Colon marched in at the head of the relief. "Glad you joined, Lance Constable," he said as she hurried up.
"Very much, sir."
"Good. Shall we go up to the daylight?" She followed him up the slope and into the damp warmth of Coombe Valley, where he sat down on a boulder. He looked at her while young Sam played at his feet. He said, "Is there anything you'd like to say to me, Lance Constable?"
"Should there be, sir?"
"I can't prove anything, of course," said Vimes. "But you are an agent of the Low King, aren't you? You've been spying on me." He waited while she considered her options. Swallows swooped overhead in squadrons.
I wouldn't put it quite like that, sir," she said eventually. "I was keeping an eye on Ham Crusher, and I'd heard about the mining, and then when it all started to heat up...
Becoming a watchman seemed a good idea, right? Did the League know?
No, look, sir, I wasn't spying on you. You told him I was heading for Coombe Valley, and the night we arrived, you went for a little fly-around, just stretching your wings. Look, this isn't my life," said Sally. "I'd joined the new force in Bionk. We were trying to make a difference up there. I did want to come to Ankh-Morpork anyway, because, well, we all want to learn, you know. How you managed to do it. Everyone speaks highly of you. And then the Low King summoned me, and I thought, where's the harm? Ham Crusher has caused trouble up there, too. I never actually told you a lie, sir."
"Rhys already knew about the secret, right?" said Vimes.
"No, sir, not as such. But I think he suspected there was something down there."
"Then why didn't he just go and look?"
"Dwarfs digging around in Coombe Valley. The trolls would go postal, sir."
"But not if the dwarfs were merely investigating why a copper from Ankh-Morpork was chasing some fleeing criminals into the caves, right? Not if the copper was good old Sam Vimes, who, everyone knows, is as straight as an arrow, even if he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. You can't bribe Sam Vimes, but why bother when you can pull the wool over his eyes?
Look, sir, I know how you must feel, but, well, there's your little boy there playing in Coombe Valley with trolls and dwarfs all round, and they're not fighting, right? I didn't lie. I just liaised a little. Wasn't it worth it, sir?" "Ha! You really worried them when you went to the wizards. Shine hadn't left the city. Rhys had to fly him in by night. All they really did was follow your lead. The only person who fooled you was me, and it turns out I wasn't very good at it. They needed you, sir. Look around and say it wasn't worth it."
100 yards away, a house-sized rock rumbled across the stone, pushed and steered by a dozen trolls, dropped into a sinkhole and blocked it like an egg in a cup. There was a cheer.
"Can I mention something else, sir?" said Sally. "I do know Angua is standing behind me."
"It's Sergeant Angua to you," said Angua by her ear. "You didn't fool me either. I told you we didn't like snitches in the watch.
But for what it's worth, sir, she smells like she's telling the truth.
"Do you still have a route to the Low King?" said Vimes.
"Yes, and I'm sure he'll—"
Sally began quickly.
"These are my demands. The Grags and what's left of their guards are coming back to Ankh-Morpork with me. That includes Ardent, though I'm told it'll be weeks before he can talk again. They're going before Vetinari. I've got promises to keep, and no one is going to stop me. It'll be tough to make any big charges stick, but I'm bloody well going to try. And since I'll bet my dinner that Vetinari is in on all this, I expect he'll pack him off back to Rhys in any case. I imagine he's got a cell that's deep enough for comfort. Understood?"
"Yes, sir. And the other demands?"
"The same as that one. Repeat